Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by threat intelligence analyst Lauren McFadden. How are you, Lauren?
I'm doing well, Sean. How about you?
Doing great. Thank you so much. And one of the things we wanted to go through today was some recent analysis that you and the team had performed with respect to a threat actor, Dynet. And you put, you know, some thought into really some of the activities, some of the campaigns that they've started. And they seem to be relatively new, but I wanted to get some feedback from you on Dynet and what you see emerging in this threat intelligence space right now.
Of course. I'm excited to chat more about Dynet and about this hacktivist landscape.
Perfect. Perfect. So Dynet, how did they emerge?
So Dynet is a relatively new hacktivist group, which is a group of cyber threat actors who conduct attacks against ideological targets, usually in furtherance of political or social ideology. Dynet initially emerged on the mobile messaging application Telegram in early March, and they announced that it was their intention to target what they referred to as corrupt government platforms and outlaw sites.
Interesting. Now, Lauren, we see them utilizing specific attack techniques, one of those being distributed denial of service attacks. Now, for our audience who potentially either don't know or can categorize what a DDoS attack is, can you explain that and why they're so significant?
Of course. So a distributed denial of service attack, or a DDoS attack, is a cyber attack where threat actors use a botnet, which is a network of infected devices, to overwhelm a targeted server, website, or network with traffic, resulting in a service disruption. Effective DDoS attacks can cause integral service outages. They can cause financial losses for the targeted organizations. And if they result in significant service disruptions, they can also cause public panic and confusion as to why a critical resource is unavailable.
Absolutely. Now, it takes us down these paths, right, of these types of attacks, this type of really, and it seems ideological in this space where Dynet, as you mentioned previously, it's really starting to look at some elements necessarily of U.S. Critical national infrastructure. Now, what are the ideological motivations that are driving Dynet?
So based on our team's review of Dynet's Telegram activity, of their interactions with other hacktivist groups, and their targeted organizations, we've assessed that Dynet is likely a pro-Palestinian hacktivist group operating in opposition to the current U.S. presidential administration. So when Dynet emerged on Telegram in early March, several established pro-Palestinian hacktivist groups promoted Dynet, to include Mr. Hamza, Lazograd Hack, and Silat Gang SG, all three of which are pro-Palestinian groups. So Mr. Hamza is an established, prominent pro-Palestinian hacktivist with ties to pro-Russian and pro-Iranian groups. Lazograd Hack is a pro-Palestinian, pro-Russian hacktivist group. And then Silat Gang SG targets what they refer to as allies of Zionist entities. So based on these groups promoting Dynet, we assess that Dynet likely shares similar ideology. Additionally, Dynet has provided statements on their Telegram channel in support of Palestine, indicating that several attacks have been quote-unquote for Palestine, especially in response to the current Israel-Palestine conflict. We also assess Dynet is likely operating in opposition to the current presidential administration. Dynet posts statements on their Telegram channel condemning current U.S. foreign policy, especially foreign policy towards Palestine and Yemen.
Interesting. Now, when there, again, we've seen alignment necessarily to these motivations. We've seen obviously certain alignment where they're getting promoted by certain ideological groups in the space, groups that really have influence as well, which again, obviously through your threat intelligence leads us down a particular path, obviously alignment. Now, with that type of alignment, what type of motivations necessarily are influencing their choice of targets or those they choose to, you know, let's say the DDoS attack strategy? What's influencing that choice? Do you know?
So Dynet appears to be targeting organizations that they likely view stand in opposition of their ideology. So like we discussed, Dynet is likely a pro-Palestinian group, and we've seen them target two large Israeli organizations to include an Israeli newspaper and an Israeli university. We also discussed how we assess Dynet is operating in opposition to the current U.S. presidential administration. And we've seen them target three websites affiliated with the current president's name. We've seen them target numerous U.S. federal government agencies. And like you mentioned previously, we've also seen them target U.S. critical national infrastructure.
Absolutely. Now, when we're thinking about categorization of what is critical national infrastructure, what comes to mind, Lauren, is this is, you know, the energy sector very much in that space. But I think Dynet's targets are a little bit more diverse than just energy in this area. Would I be right in that assumption? And any other sectors that they've been targeting or have seen to be targeting?
Yes, Sean, you're absolutely right. So they have targeted the energy sector, but they've also targeted the communication sector, the healthcare sector, the finance sector, the transportation sector, and the government sector. So they've been pretty diverse in their attacks against U.S. critical infrastructure.
Interesting. Interesting. So again, not only are there ideological motivations, but then there are also specific elements of targeting in this area. Now, when we think about attribution, I think, you know, there's elements in the space, obviously, the techniques and tactics that you'll utilize from a threat intelligence perspective. But are there any specific examples that you can call out where we've seen claimed attacks from this group and necessarily we're providing attestation of, yep, that aligns to not only the ideology, but the strategy, the tactics, the techniques, etc.?
Yes, absolutely. So Dynet is pretty transparent when they claim an attack, because they will post the claim publicly to their Telegram channel. So we've seen Dynet claim an attack against a U.S. electric provider, which could cause problems for individuals just trying to pay a utility bill or see if there's a power outage in their area. We've seen them target the login pages at several U.S. financial institutions, which could be problematic for users looking to pay a credit card bill or check their financial records. And we've also seen them target three electronic healthcare records providers, which is a platform that many Americans use to communicate with their healthcare team or to access their medical records. Additionally, Dynet has targeted three federal government agencies' webpages, in addition to two webpages affiliated with transportation offerings in Los Angeles. Lastly, we've seen Dynet claim about four attacks against large social networking sites, which, as you know, are common platforms for people to connect with their friends, their families, and their communities. And those are platforms that people rely on a daily basis. So any outages to those platforms can be pretty disruptive.
Absolutely. I mean, when we're thinking about necessarily digitization of modern society, it seems like representatively, their choices of targets are those that can have really huge potential damage, not only in terms of with the DDoS necessarily, in terms of the availability of those underlying services, but combinations in the space really seems that they've taken on a breadth of respective infrastructure. You know, I don't know if this is common, but one of the things I've seen before is, you know, certain groups, certain APTs, those that, you know, get named and have different naming convention based upon the vendor representatively, seem to have, you know, specific industrial verticals. And here it just seems it's really a matter of choice. These targets are necessarily not focused on a specific industry, which is interesting. Again, showing one, the potency of these types of attacks, both in terms of one, our awareness and ability to protect against them, because it's not just an independent, it's not just the energy sector, as I mentioned before, many, many different areas, communications, healthcare, finance, et cetera, social media, comms. I mean, the list goes on, really. So when you think and you see, one, the Telegram, and in some cases, you know, there could be the, I'm claiming responsibility for necessarily something that wasn't something I had instituted, something I had performed. Where do you see the credibility of Dynet's claims with respect to these types of attacks?
That's a great question, Sean, and it can be a really challenging one to answer. So when Dynet is claiming these attacks on Telegram, they will typically post a screen capture of the targeted webpage, showing that that webpage is unavailable. Additionally, they will oftentimes include links to a website called CheckHost, which is an online platform that will show users the current availability of a specific website. So when I look at these two data points together, between the screen capture and the CheckHost link, those data points tell me that that targeted webpage did likely experience some sort of service disruption or service outage. However, those data points do not tell me that Dynet was responsible for that outage. I think all of us in the cyberspace can appreciate that websites occasionally go down for routine maintenance. Sometimes there are website outages for just unrelated factors. So these data points don't tell me that Dynet was responsible for the attack, but they are good indications that those websites did experience some sort of technical issue. For me as an analyst to be able to verify Dynet's claims that they did in fact cause that service outage, I would need further technical indicators to draw attribution back to a specific group.
Yeah. I think that's just the due diligence, right? And in a lot of cases where we see that there's potentially not a lot of information and it's aligning to similar attack methodology or underlying, you know, respectfully, if it was malware, we'd look at the code and say, oh, there's code that looks like the same, a copy and paste and some adjustments. And again, given the distributed nature and sharing of that type of information, very, very difficult for attribution, i.e. necessarily why we need experts like yourself to go through and assess, address, and be able to look at attribution in certain ways. And in some a probability score, maybe. Oh, yes, it does look aligned to this area and these things. And like you say, the opportunistic claiming, oh, that was us when it's, no, this was just maintenance. Again, a very interesting path and a very interesting proposition, because I think it also puts into play and just, again, certain items, not to be facetious, but is if a website does go down for maintenance or just for any clerical error, whatever it happens to be, comes back up, is, and then someone claims it's, oh, do I trust the vendor or am I more aligned to the attacker? And those, you know, offer and pose different elements of responsibility. And again, where we tend to go into, oh, you know, they tried to play off an attack strategy by saying it was maintenance or things like that. And again, it does get into those elements where we need to address, we need to use best judgment. And also, even with respective services, it's looking at resiliency in this space, right? It is dependency is very tough. And again, depending on which website, which particular critical infrastructure experiences outages, has consequently different elements of impact to representative persons and communities, governments, businesses, etc. And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break. Don't know how to meet the standard of reasonable cybersecurity? Well, you won't get there by putting a fancy lock on the server room door.
Right, Sean. CIS Secure Suite comes with integrated tools and resources for implementing a reasonable cyber defense program.
Now, let's not forget about testing. You can also use a CIS Secure Suite membership to evaluate the reasonableness of your cyber defenses using risk quantification.
And this will help you to comply with U.S. and state data privacy laws and show you've implemented the necessary security measures to avoid liability in the event of a data breach.
And now through April 30th, you can save up to 20% on a new membership using promo code RCD25.
So, want to make your cyber defense program reasonable?
Well, you need a CIS Secure Suite membership to build and test it.
Visit cisecurity.org/CIS-SecureSuite to learn more.
Thank you. And let's jump back into the episode.
So now, Lauren, when we're thinking Dynet, one of the things I saw through ThreatWire, and we'll talk about that momentarily, but one of the things I saw was I'm not sure if it's a change in the tactic or techniques that they use, but kind of the version 2 of Dynet coming forward and potential capabilities in the space. So where do you see, or what do you see, the potential future impact of Dynet and their activities?
Yeah, that's a great observation. So in late March, Dynet posted on their Telegram channel that Dynet V2, or version 2, has entered service. So earlier in this podcast, we talked about the importance of a botnet during a DDoS attack, or that network of infected devices that threat actors use to leverage the DDoS attack. So based on my experience, I would assess that Dynet version 2 likely involves a larger, more sophisticated botnet. With a larger botnet, Dynet would be able to conduct more prolonged and possibly harmful attacks, which does raise concerns about their future activity, especially if they continue to target U.S. critical infrastructure. Additionally, in late March, Dynet also claimed to have breached a U.S. federal government agency database on their Telegram channel. And they claimed that during that breach, they also exfiltrated employees' personally identifiable information, or PII. This attack has not been verified or confirmed. But if this attack were to be true, it would mark a really important departure from Dynet's traditional tactics, techniques, and procedures, or TTPs. This would be the first instance where Dynet has not just attacked a website with a DDoS attack, but rather breached the website and exfiltrated sensitive information. This would show that their TTPs are becoming more sophisticated and that they're escalating their attack strategies, which once again raises concerns if they do continue to target U.S. critical infrastructure.
Absolutely. Well, that was one of the things that pointed out to me was when I was reviewing and then obviously, you know, discussing this respective group was it is a departure, but is it in some cases for groups such as this to test the waters with certain capability and then ultimately ideological capability start to improve or necessarily or change, giving them new direction or new representative targets or new objectives necessarily. And when we see that, we see this evolution now moving into, well, it's not just the availability of the, we'll use the CIA triad. We're going to then look at the confidentiality element. And, you know, as mentioned, you know, there was, I think you mentioned in late March, I believe, middle of March, they were talking about, oh, you know, this infiltration of government agency and we've got PII and things of this nature. And that certainly is a different message, right? Because now it's not just we're affecting necessarily the consumption of services. Now we're actually looking at different elements within this organization or any organization, potentially. Ultimately, I would think across these industrial verticals, they would be looking for any opportunity to action an objective, which, again, we've talked about some of their motivations, some of their political alignment and ideological alignment. And those have differing consequences because now it's not just necessarily a protection of DDoS and service availability, but now we're talking about a more advanced level, as you'd mentioned, where now the TTPs are more focused on adversarial approaches that, again, we have to protect ourselves. So it's thinking a little bit differently. And the reason why this one is so good and prevalent, I think, for the podcast representatively, is that it helps us start to think about where are our reactions and our responsibilities when we see such groups as this. starting to look at, again, government services, right? They mentioned the U.S. federal agency that they had representatively claimed to have exfiltrated data. But then we look at energy, healthcare, finance, transportation, communications. And as we start to see shifts in an ability, a capability, and then ultimately, as I mentioned, these objectives, it requires each representative persons responsible and accountable for confidentiality, integrity, and availability within these agencies, within these businesses, to really start to respond in terms of awareness, preparedness, detection capability, and really getting into that threat intelligence space. And I think that's so important, really where I start to see elements of attribution, because I ask these questions, and this is a question, you know, that I wanted to ask you, was where do we think that Dynet's tactics may evolve in the future with respect to what we've seen or what was represented as their version two? You know, what does version 3, 4, 5, and 6 start to look like?
I think we may continue to see an evolution and escalation in their tactics like we are already seeing. So Dynet began with primarily just distributed denial of service attacks. And we see that maybe they are dipping a toe into data exfiltration and, like you said, violating the confidentiality of these organizations. I think moving forward, we could see additional attack techniques from Dynet to include web defacements, perhaps even begin to dabbling into phishing and that kind of cyber attack vector to once again compromise more sensitive information and gain access to more of these organizations' infrastructure to conduct more damaging and more harmful cyber attacks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it leads me to really then start to think about, okay, now we're starting to see an escalation. And again, it's not just Dynet. There's a lot of other adversaries that exist. But the reason why I was focused on this one, why obviously I wanted to have this podcast and talk to you about it, Lauren, was this evolutionary element, and now thinking about what measures representatively organizations and these industrial parenthetics and public-private organizations should really start to take in terms of a defensive strategy against Dynet's attacks. Any thoughts or recommendations in this area?
Absolutely. So if organizations want to protect their systems from attacks similar to Dynet, whether it be distributed denial of service or these breaching and exfiltration attacks, there are several steps I recommend organizations can take. The first step is that I would recommend organizations employ a web application firewall that is capable of filtering on specific IP addresses and locations. Building on that, I would also recommend that organizations configure that firewall to alert on any abnormal traffic patterns, specifically if there is an abnormal traffic pattern indicative of high volume traffic that represents a distributed denial of service attack. And lastly, this really just goes into implementing cybersecurity best practices, but I would recommend organizations take whatever steps they can to minimize their overall attack surface. What I mean by that is organizations should regularly check for and patch any existing vulnerabilities, and they should also implement network segmentation and zero trust security to ensure that it is challenging for these cyber threat actors to compromise or breach their systems.
Oh, 100%. I love those recommendations because it's really in a lot of the tenets, really, of the CIS controls, right? Everything that we provide, promote, and we want to build into organizational defensive strategy. And it really is, and I like where you were going there with the defense in depth element. The zero trust perspective, and I've always, you know, when I first heard, and this is a few years ago now with respect to zero trust, but is the assume breach, right? Always be in that mindset helps you necessarily. Okay, so if we are, what do we need to do? And you go back to the monitoring capability, right? Looking at these anomaly detection elements where we see DDoS. Well, DDoS in a lot of cases is going to be this volumetric increase in terms of traffic necessarily causing representatively outage and issues with underlying network infrastructure and web server response times and things of that nature. Very, very important. And we follow And as Lauren mentioned, is this path of reducing the attack surface so important? One, we need to understand the attack surface itself, right? So I just go into CIS controls 1 and 2, know my hardware, know my software, and even throw in 3, know my data. Knowing, I think, representatively helps us then build really certain capabilities that we can strategize, prioritize, and also build competency in the space. And when we see Dynet's tactics, and again, getting that threat intelligence is so helpful because, okay, now I see necessarily what are, if I'm in the right industrial vertical, and really with Dynet's, it's many, many different ones. So it really covers a plethora of different organizational responses. Is this is what I have to implement in order to protect? This is what I need to be aware of, really, in terms of managing that target, right? That attack surface that you've mentioned. And we don't want to be that target, right? We want to have so many layers necessarily move on to someone else or move on to a different tactic, technique, and let's protect necessarily our infrastructure. But it does lead me, Lauren, and I've mentioned it previously, was ThreatWire, but this is, I think, critically important for organizations to understand. Any organization in the parentheticals that we've mentioned need to be aware of so they can respond to these emerging cyber threats. And we've seen Dynet with Dynet V2 necessarily go into a different TTP set. And we need to be aware of that, right? And be able to respond to that and many, many different other threat vectors. And really the integration of intelligence, I think, is so important for any organization's maturation. And like, you had mentioned, is we've got to understand and reduce that surface, but necessarily we need to know who's attacking what surfaces that we have so that we can make sure they're minimized. So what would you recommend with respect to staying informed about emerging cyber threats like Dynet?
For sure. So I think for listeners who want to stay apprised of these emerging critical trends, such as Dynet, a great option would be to subscribe to ThreatWire, which is a low-cost CIS subscription that provides actionable insights into prominent or emerging multidimensional threats, which includes threats in the cyber, physical, and information operation landscapes. ThreatWire subscribers will receive a weekly threat report that includes a digest of the last week's threats. It includes commentary from our analysts, and it also includes really actionable mitigation measures that organizations can take to protect their systems. In addition to that weekly threat report, ThreatWire subscribers will also receive regular, in-depth analytic updates on critical trends, just like Dynet, so that they can be apprised of emerging trends in the cyber, physical, and information operations space.
Absolutely. And the one differentiator, and why I mention it, again, this is really meant to inform. And one of the greatest things that I've seen with ThreatWire is the ability to cross really dimensions of the same domain. So when you mentioned cyber, physical, and information domains, so important that those are correlated, because we start to see really the elements cross now in terms of threat awareness, what I need to do to protect not only from a cyber digital perspective, but it expands more than that, especially in critical national infrastructure, where we start to see the physical consequences of attacks and they're really what can happen in those spaces. And, we've mentioned with DDoS and elevated attack methodologies from other groups, having that intelligence and being aware of it, not only necessarily for my organization, but the supply chain across many utilities and differentiated elements, is really going to help overall your security awareness. And that tactical element, Lauren, that I'm thinking about here, so it's more than just operational. There's a tactical approach and a tactical structure that you need to get this information in terms of both the context and the mitigation steps that are coming through ThreatWire, but also strategically. So that CIS control element that we mentioned, informing that or making it intelligence-driven, is going to really then start to identify either the gaps, where I'm doing well in terms of an overall posture, where I need to challenge both myself and the organization to be responsive to these types of threats, because Dynet and others are evolving. So we, it becomes the mousetrap element, right? So we create the mousetrap, and then it's just different techniques to bypass that. And then we have to go iterate again on building newer, more capable defenses. We need that intelligence to be aware of when our defenses need to be improved and where we need to mature or build new capability, respectfully, in this space. So, Lauren, just wanted to get your thoughts on that approach and structurally where ThreatWire can really fit into an organization's overall awareness to help build that defense in depth and awareness capability. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes total sense. I think one component of what you said really stood out to me, and this is where I think ThreatWire can really help us to fill these gaps, is that threats are no longer happening in their silo. Meaning most cyber threats now have a physical component, or some may even have an information operation component. Currently, a lot of our physical threats, in fact, will have a cyber component. And a lot of existing threat feeds focus on solely one of those silos, meaning that we could be missing some important insights when there are crossovers between these threats. So ThreatWire is a really comprehensive intelligence feed that organizations can use to bolster their holistic security posture.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Wonderful. So head over to cisecurity.org, check out ThreatWire, take a look, and if it makes sense, subscribe. Again, a lot of great information in this space. And not only that, you get all the insights from Lauren and her team, but into those representative reports, and really helps you then start to dive into really the threat and, in some cases, overall risk exposure. And really then starts to utilize this intelligence to be driven in that space and really move down a path to security. Lauren, it was absolutely fantastic to get a chance to talk to you and look at and see and hear all the great work that you're doing. Really appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks, Sean. It was great to be here and it was great chatting with you.
Fantastic. Thank you. And to our audience, thank you. Remember to subscribe in all the usual ways. Catch us on YouTube at The CI Security. Questions, comments, concerns, podcast@cisecurity.org. And with that, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.